Morning Meeting, brought to you by Verizon. Come home to a better network.
All right, well, the bye is over. The Patriots passed that first test. They knocked the rust off, and they're back rolling. 30 points against, I would say, a pretty good Dallas defense.
I think Dallas' defense played very well. And what I was really more struck with, Freddie, was how well the Patriots' defense played in that game. I thought that was their best performance. I know it's only four games, but I thought the run defense was better. I thought the coverage was tighter. They got some pressure on a backup quarterback, admittedly, in Brandon Whedon. But overall, I thought a really strong performance by the defense.
Yeah, but I wanted to talk about the Dallas defense first against the Patriots offense because...
Well, I thought this was Patriots football weekly. We accentuated what the Patriots
We talked about, you know, rolling
I thought we were going to start positive. He wants to talk about the Dallas defense. Then we have to start with Greg Hardy with five hits on Tom
Brady. We also talked about last week keeping this offensive momentum going. And I think they did that to the tune of 30 points, despite Greg Hardy having a good game.
I mean, well, the momentum died.
Terrible human being, but good football player.
Great football player. And we were talking about it this week on PFW in Progress. One of the best pass rushing performances against the Patriots in a long, you know, Jason Taylor, like you go back to those days, Von Miller we talked about, but you know, few and far between where a guy dominates a Patriots offensive line like Greg Hardy did coming off a suspension right out of the gates. And that really, the Patriots were punched in the mouth.
They were.
Three field goals in the first four drives. This wasn't, you know, Ryan Allen, you take the day, I mean, three punts in the first four drives. This wasn't Ryan Allen taking the day off. They got caught off guard by that 3-2 dime, as Bill called it, that the Cowboys threw at them. They were both physically and mentally a little off kilter early on.
Yeah, and then going back to now what Paul is saying, because of, I think, the Patriots' defense, you always felt, though, that it was just a matter of time.
Well, I mean, at the risk of drawing your ire again, yeah, that's why I gave the defense the credit, because I think what Andy talked about, what was the reason the offense was finally able to get going was the defense and the special teams. Ryan Allen's punts, I think he had four punts, three of them inside the 20, so really good coverage. They took advantage of the field position, six consecutive three and outs for Dallas in the first half. They never really did anything offensively well for a while in that game. The Patriots didn't, but they kept taking advantage of tremendous field position. They were consistently taking over around the 40-yard line or, you know, near midfield. And eventually, there's just too much offense for anybody to hold you down. And that's when, in the second half, they made some adjustments with the protection, I thought, using the extra tight ends to help with Hardy, and finally they got going.
And we talked about last week that you don't want to lose in both trenches. That's where the Cowboys needed to win this game. We thought their offensive line might have a chance to dominate a Patriots front seven that has been up and down to start the year, was allowing 4.7 yards per carry coming in. That offensive line never did that. The Patriots met that challenge up front, where they held them, I think, to 40 yards rushing on 13 carries. It was right around 3 yards a carry, when Dallas clearly wanted to play it safe, you know, stay on the field, keep Brady off the field, not force Whedon to make plays. They couldn't execute that. Unfortunately, early on, at least, you lost in the trenches against Hardy and that defensive
line. Yeah, but they, like you said, they did rise to the challenge against that offensive line that Bill Belichick called the best in the NFL.
It's a good offensive line, and I thought, and Bill also talked about the safeties and their role in that, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago for the Jacksonville game. We know Patrick Chung is a run-oriented safety, but I think Jordan Richards is a young guy that looks like he's in that kind of mold, bigger than Chung, and has similar, and Belichick earlier in the week talked about the instincts that he has, very similar to those of Chung in terms of run support, knowing when to hit a gap and fill a gap and when to stay over the top and do those kinds of things. So I thought those two guys helped the linebackers and got involved. Yeah. The run defense was, I think, the best that it's been all year.
And Jamie Collins, mentally and physically, had a great game because Dante Hightower goes down early with the rib injury. That leaves Collins sort of running the show out there, communication, everything, and he was all over the field, as Bill Belichick said. He had 10 tackles, probably could have been credited with 20. Was his forced fumble. You know, he's really become kind of that Gronkowski of the defense, where he's always seemingly showing up in different ways and everything kind of morphs off of him.
Yeah, we have to mention, going back to offense, Deion Lewis. He seems to be the guy this year that, you know, when they need a spark, he's the guy.
Yeah,
whether it's in catching the ball or running the ball, he's that X factor that is new to this offense and a playmaker like they haven't seen in the backfield in a while.
Yeah, I think even when the other team does a decent job of sort of containing him, he finds a way. He never lets the first guy get him.
Right.
So even when the gains are a little bit more modest, he finds a way to get positive yardage. The touchdown was silly. The 10-yard touchdown where he...
Five guys.
But he ducks underneath a guy. I mean, just...
Really short.
Well... Doesn't make it any less impressive.
No, it was, he is, you know, you said a spark. He's electric. And sometimes it's not just with the woo woo, you know, the quick. Sometimes it's lowering a shoulder and maybe surprising a guy who's so much thinking about don't get embarrassed, and all of a sudden, wait, why is he running right at me? And he just kind of bowled me over.
I don't know who it was on Dallas, but he took a guy on the sideline and just bowled him like 5 yards out of bounds.
And he's capable. He's more powerful than you think. And I think they fear the quickness, so then they have to give up a little bit of the power and their own power. You know, he's only four games in. He's a quarter of the way there. They gave him the extension last week, so they love what he's doing. But he's putting together a type of season we've never seen in New England. You know, you're looking at the numbers, the balance between offensive, yards from scrimmage on the ground and through the air. He's on a remarkable pace.
He really is, and you said it before, it might have been on our radio show, but right now, all you're worried about is him getting hurt.
Yep.
It's not even like, can he make the play?
Nope.
It's like, you just want to keep this thing going. And the only thing that's going to stop him is an injury.
And he eliminated the fumbles. Yeah. You know, another week where he doesn't put the ball on the ground, that was another little, you know, hiccup after the first 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you just worry because he is undersized. But sooner or later, you forget that and just say, wow, he's damn good.
All right, well, Dallas is in the rearview mirror, and we've got the Colts in our sights.
You excited about that one,
Fred? Oh, I can't wait.
Patriots offensive line obviously had some struggles on Sunday in Dallas, particularly outside on the edges. Nate Solder leaves the game with an elbow problem. Marcus Cannon forced to come in, play a full-time role at left tackle, basically played the entire second half. 5 sacks allowed, but all in the first half. Bill Belichick was very complimentary of Cannon, both in the post-game press conference and right on Patriots.com. He also mentioned that Marcus Cannon did a really nice job filling in. So it's going to be interesting to see moving forward. Now, one of the reasons I thought that pass protection improved in the second half, obviously, anytime Tom Brady's involved, he helps that out because he gets rid of the ball so quickly. But I also thought the coaches made an adjustment, used more tight ends to try to help out on the edges, and Mike Williams and Rob Gronkowski were kept in often in the second half. And I thought it was really interesting to see Mike Williams get twice as many snaps in that game as Scott Chandler. Chandler's not known as a blocker. He's more of a red zone threat as a receiver. Haven't seen a lot of him lately. We've seen more of Williams. Again, these are the kinds of things that interest me, the kind of things to keep an eye on moving forward. Williams has a tackle background. He's a great blocker, so it wasn't too surprising to see. But moving forward, is Williams more of the answer as the backup at tight end? We'll see. My last point, I'm going to move over to the Patriots defense. And on Sunday, we saw Dont'a Hightower leave the game with a rib injury. This is a concern moving forward also because I really think Hightower does so many things. He and Collins, certainly the two best all-around defensive players on the roster. So missing Hightower for any length of time could cause some problems. But it's also going to create opportunity. We haven't seen a ton of Jerod Mayo. We've got to see more of him against Dallas. Haven't seen a ton of Jonathan Freeney on defense. We saw him a lot as well. And moving forward, you also have a guy like John Bostic, who they traded for during the bye week. He's a guy that has the kind of athleticism that can play in the passing game, play in coverage. He's a guy that's the perfect insurance policy for an injury like this. So if they're missing Hightower, I don't think they're in as dire straits as they were maybe a year ago at this time if they had lost Hightower earlier in the season than they did. John Bostic is there, and I think they have plenty in reserve.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
To be able to kick it that far, I mean, I've made plenty of long kicks just messing around before, but, you know, the situation's got to be right.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Putnam Investments is a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
Images of the week from a big 30-6 win in Dallas. Here's one of Jabal Sheard. He leads the team in sacks this year with four. Here's a picture of his fourth. How would you feel on the tackling end of this picture? Finally, here's that great Brady sneak touchdown.
Player's Perspective, brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence through new ways of thinking.
Joining me now in the Gillette Stadium locker room, Patriots kicker Steven Gostkowski, or as some people are calling him, Mr. Perfect. How do you like that nickname that I'm starting?
I don't know.
You don't like that? Are you superstitious?
No, not really. Used to be. Not much anymore.
Coming off a career-long 57-yard field goal, tied a franchise record in Dallas, when you attempt a kick like that, what's going through your head, and is there any change from a 42, 32-yard or anything like that?
No, not really. Just kind of think about not over-kicking and try to kick it too hard. I know And I usually have the leg for a kick like that. It's just sometimes you get back there and it looks farther and you try to kick it harder, which can hurt your accuracy. And, you know, you get so much adrenaline, and it was a good opportunity. It seemed to bring a lot of momentum to the end of the half, which is always fun to have a positive impact on a win like that.
And when you get a kick like that, do you know it's good the second it leaves your foot? Is it almost like you don't have to watch it, or are there some uncertainty there?
Most of the time when I hit the ball off my foot, I know if it's good or not. The only time where you really don't know is just like a crazy wind game. But I'd say most of the time once the ball hits my foot, I know it's in. There's been a few kicks I've missed where I thought I hit a good kick. But for the most part, if it hits off my foot the wrong way, I kind of can tell. And then I'm like hoping it to go in.
Is there any part of you deep down that ever looks sort of at jealousy? A guy like Adam Vinatieri, who's inside every week now in Indy, and think, you know what? It's a lot easier when you're kicking in those conditions.
Well, I think that's a bad example because he definitely paid his dues here. I mean, sometimes I'd say more practice. Like, I think the hardest thing here is we practice outside every day. And, you know, during the game, we got the luxury of, like, the heaters and, you know, some adrenaline during practice. You just kind of stand out there for about an hour and then you get to go out there and kick an ice cold ball. But no, I enjoy the challenge of kicking here. I think it's definitely given me a little more mental toughness than I probably would have had.
All right, well, good luck this week in Indy against Adam Vinatieri, who you replaced here. And I'm going to say it. I think you get 65 yards in you. I think you can do 65.
One day, yeah.
It's Colts week, and that means we're talking about, no, not Deflategate, running the football. We know that's how the Patriots have dominated the Colts in recent meetings. Last three meetings, they've run the ball at least 40 times against Indianapolis with a lot of success, whether it was Jonas Gray or LeGarrette Blount. This time, it'll probably be LeGarrette Blount, averaging 4 yards a carry already this season. But guess what? Colts run defense a little bit better, only averaging 3.8 yards per carry on the season. Are they ready for the test of the Patriots' run game? They haven't been the last few times. Let's be honest. The Colts, as much as they were once Super Bowl favorites, are a major underdog in this game as the Patriots come to town. And when underdogs try to knock off the favorite, turnovers are key. The problem for the Colts, they're terrible in the turnover game. 31st in the league, -7 on the season, 7 interceptions for Andrew Luck. And the Patriots, top 5 in turnover ratio, +5 for the year. And guess what? Haven't thrown an interception yet. Colts need turnovers, and the Patriots don't give them up. The only thing that's more injured with Colts quarterback Andrew Luck than his shoulder is his pride. He's been terrible to start the season. He ranks 34th in the league in passer rating. That's right, that's a 32-team league. He isn't one of the best starters. His completion percentage is about 50%, 7 interceptions. He's not doing anything well. For what should be the rising star quarterback in the NFL, Luck has struggled. The only way the Colts can win is if Luck comes back and looks like he looked the last couple years and not like he looked the first couple weeks.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
It doesn't eliminate the possibility of winning the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, I think it does.
Well, you're stupid.
Bill Belichick, I'm not the one who suggests trading Tom Brady.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. New England Football Night is presented by AT&T, mobilizing your world.
When the Patriots win the coin toss, they defer and receive the ball to start the second half. When they lose the toss, and that seems to happen rarely, the other team more often than not elects to receive the ball, thereby giving the Patriots what they wanted anyway. I don't understand why every team wouldn't do what the Patriots do, but they don't. Think about it. When playing at home, going on defense first keeps the crowd noise up, hopefully affecting the opposing offense. If you're on the road, going on defense first forces the home crowd to quiet down after all the pregame festivities aimed at whipping them up into a frenzy. Add on the chance to score to end the half and then get the ball right back to start the third quarter, and going on defense first is a no-brainer.
What in the world is going on in Baltimore? The Ravens are 1-4, all but dead in that AFC North, and I don't see any end in sight. This is right now a bad football team. The defense, I think they have a good, solid defense in Baltimore, but they can't get a stop in the fourth quarter. They had a 2-score lead against Cleveland at home last week and couldn't hold on. They kept getting the lead, and they kept giving it back before finally losing in overtime. They have no wide receivers. They lost Torrey Smith in the offseason. Their first-round pick, Perryman, has been out all year with a knee injury. Joe Flacco is basically all by himself. They were missing Steve Smith. I really respect the Baltimore Ravens and what they've done. And come playoff time, there's very few teams in the league that I fear more than Baltimore. But I'll tell you what, there will be no playoff time for the Ravens this season.
You've heard of any port in a storm. This week, it was any passport in a storm for the Buffalo Bills. Tyrod Taylor, their young quarterback, is banged up. They needed to sign a backup, but they're also traveling to London to take on the Jaguars. So anybody they signed had to have a passport so they could travel. They finally picked Josh Johnson, the backup. He has a passport. It's all great. But this is not something people talked about or thought about when they said there needs to be a team in London. The devil is in the details, or maybe the devil is in the passport.
Trash Talk, brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter. Dumpster in a bag can take it on. Visit thebaxter.com for more info.
Going to mix it up with a fun hypothetical this week. If the Indianapolis Colts came calling, would you trade Tom Brady straight up for Andrew Luck?
No.
Why not? Best young quarterback in the game with the best coach in the game. You give up one Super Bowl, maybe, for a decade of dominance.
Andy.
I know
Andy.
The luster is off Luck, but there was a time when everybody said he was the future of the quarterback position.
First of all, I love me some Andrew Luck. I think he's a great young quarterback, just as you said. Okay?
Perfect. So let's do the deal.
Tom Brady is a great old quarterback who's playing as well as he has in several years.
And you're buying into the hype. He's going to play for another 10 years?
No, I don't care about the next 10 years. I care about right now. Right now, the Patriots are the best team in the AFC and maybe the best team in football. Why do I want to risk that?
Four Super Bowls
to pick up a guy
in
who,
the
by
Bush
the way, is
are worth
one of
more
the
than
worst
one in the hand.
Statistical quarterbacks in
four
football.
Super Bowls. Andrew Luck and Bill Belichick could go to another four Super Bowls.
I'm sorry, did the question change? Did you ask me, would I rather win the Super Bowl this year or four guaranteed in the future?
That's what it is.
No, it's not.
That is what
no,
it is.
No, it's not.
And there's no guarantee this year, by the way.
How many Super Bowls does Andrew Luck have?
Oh, wait, so the Patriots are going to roll. Has he been with Bill Belichick?
How many Super Bowls does he
have? How many does Brady have without Belichick? Interesting. So you think it's a foregone conclusion the Patriots have won the Super Bowl?
Four.
No chance.
Yeah. Tom Brady already has four Super Bowls. I can't even believe we're talking about this.
Why?
The Patriots are 4-0. They scored 8,000 points in the first 4 weeks.
What does Bill Belichick often say?
And you want to get rid of the quarterback
midstream. You've got to make tough decisions for the short and long term. No better decision long term than Andrew Luck in a Patriots uniform.
If you want to bring the timetable and change the timetable in this, and you want
to
fast forward to after they win the Super Bowl this year,
no. Well, the Colts won't do it then.
You want to get into why wouldn't they
do that? The Colts are in desperation mode right now. They're all trying to fight for their jobs. This would be a dumb trade for them, and it would be a great trade for the Patriots.
Andy, it wouldn't be anywhere near as dumb as a team that's a Super Bowl favorite trading away their quarterback who is playing arguably the best he ever has.
All people want to know is how are the Patriots going to maintain the dynasty, extend it. You need to get your Steve Young or your Aaron Rodgers, and he's right there in Indy.
But not at the expense of sacrificing the now.
Why is it a sacrifice?
Because
a year ago at this time,
first of all, he's hurt. He's not even playing well.
He's back.
Would
he be better immediately
here?
Would he be better immediately here with this offensive line and Rob Gronkowski?
Yes, I believe he's a great young quarterback.
It doesn't eliminate the possibility of winning the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, I think it does.
Well, you're stupid.
Well, listen.
Bill
I'm
Belichick
not the one
could win the Super Bowl this
Tom
year.
Brady
it's a fun
Luck.
Hypothetical. We started
while
with that.
While the Patriots are 4-0.
Fun hypothetical.
Dumb? Stupid?
Number 12 jerseys, you keep selling them. You just rip off the Brady and you stamp on a Luck.
I've tired of this nonsense.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Fisher Plows, a whole new way to attack winter. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. You, your advisor, and Putnam, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
All right, it's question time here in TFW. But first,
woohoo!
The debut of the Wilson Hart Power Index. Andy, take it away.
Number one, the Green Bay Packers. But the Patriots did close the gap this week to number two, and they 4.0 compared to 3.7 on the index for the Packers. Then you have number three, the Arizona Cardinals have moved into third place. A lot of people say maybe the best well-rounded team in football.
A lot of the traditional power rankings have the Cardinals lower, and I disagree with that.
They actually were in this until this week. They bumped up from number six to number three. Carolina Panthers 4, Denver Broncos 5, Bengals 6. And then down the other end, Detroit Lions, obviously.
So the Broncos, so offense has nothing to do with this? Is that what we're saying?
Everything is included in this, and you know that. Both sides of the ball, the entire game, winning and losing.
thanks.
All right, so Patriots number two.
Number two.
Packers number one.
And then the Cardinals, as you said, are, you know, the interesting one.
I don't like not having anything to complain about.
Okay. When you want to look at it, you can study all 32. I'm sure you can come
up with
something. Not going
to lie, it doesn't sit well with me, Andy.
All right, let's get to the questions.
I like ripping those things every week.
Bevan Manson writes in, and he wants to know, he's concerned about Deion Lewis's durability down the stretch. Should the Patriots be giving him some breaks now and then, you know?
Well, why are we concerned about the durability? Aside from his history. I mean, but the here and now.
He's a little bit of a smaller guy who's had an injury history.
Yeah, but, you know, it happens. I think he has a key role for this team. I'm not looking to put him on the sideline. Now, if you want to do it like they did in Jacksonville, where you build a big lead and you're starting to manage reps and you put Edelman and Gronk and Lewis on the sideline, that's fine. But right now, he's a key part of this offense, and you know what Bill says, football players play football.
Well, how about Sunday in Dallas? I mean, he did in Jacksonville, you're right, he didn't play a whole lot in the second half, and I think Dallas, once they got the long touchdown to Edelman, I thought that could have been time maybe to throttle it back a little bit with Lewis. I think he is a smaller guy, and I would like to sort of lower his touches if I could. I don't need him to have 15, 20 touches every game if I don't need it. If I need it to win a game, he's been the, one of the most explosive guys.
He lowers his own touches by not letting defenders touch him.
Brett Lawson, how about Jamie Collins, he says. Please, Bill, sign him to an extension now.
He can't, but I agree with the sentiment of the email. They have to wait till after his third season under the current CBA. Right. But other than that, I've said this week on PFW in Progress Radio. He is now the guy that I would, you know, everybody talked about it was Solder and Collins and Hightower and Jones. You did the Solder. Well, guess what? Now I do Collins, and then I worry about the others. He is the star of the defense, the Gronk of the defense. It all works around him.
Okay. And Otis Hill writes, in the offensive line has had its struggles, especially Nate Solder with Greg Hardy. In his opinion, he thinks Andrews did a great job. But his question, however, relates to the inaction by the Patriots coaching staff in the first half when it was obvious that Solder needed help.
I was a little curious about that. Andy and I talked about it during the game. I thought they waited a little bit longer to give the help on the edges that maybe that they needed, because it was clear that Hardy was too much for whoever was blocking, whether it was Solder, whether it was Marcus Cannon when he came in, and they fixed that in the second half. You saw a lot of Michael Williams. You saw a lot of Gronk staying in. And you saw a little bit more chipping, I thought, by Deion Lewis, although you don't want to rely on a third down back to take a guy like Greg Hardy. But, yeah, I was a little surprised that they waited as long as they did.
All right. Well, good set of questions this week. Every week, send them to AskPFW@Patriots.com.